how would it work for me to stay behind? With a lick of my lips, I admit, I wouldn't want to be alone on Christmas Eve. I won't leave you alone, you know that, Shane says in a low voice that he usually reserves for when we're alone. The intensity of his gaze feels as intimate as if he'd reached under my skirt. I shift in my seat. Since we arrived, he hasn't touched me once or dropped any hints that we've been together as anything more than casual step-siblings. Right now, though, the look he's giving me tells the story of us as we really are. We have private conversations and plans that exclude other people. Ethan clears his throat, and when I turn my head to look at our parents, I find that my mom's face is frozen. Oh God, I don't want her to worry. Shane's phone buzzes and he takes it out. Dropping his napkin on the table, he stands. Excuse me a minute. Mom lurches up from her seat too. I have to go to the ladies' room. Ugh. We almost made it to the end without incident. And things were going so well before the talk of Christmas break. Ethan and I watch them walk away. Then he leans forward and whispers, "What's going on, Avery?"
Shane. One of my neighbors sent footage from a couple days earlier. It looks to be about midday. A guy who's dressed in black with a baseball cap pulled low over his face walks past my house twice in the span of 5 minutes. He looks at my place and into the yard. On the second stroll, he turns his face enough for me to recognize him. Todd Botterach. Son of a bitch. So Botterach cased the house even before the frat party. My shutting down his bullying on the video call and sending a message that he needed to let Avery take the lead on the project obviously infuriated him. I don't blame him for coming after me. I stripped him of his power and made him look pathetic and weak in front of his friend and a woman who threatens the pecking order in the class. No guy like him wants to let that go. But to try to burn me alive, especially when Avery was with me, makes me think he's a psycho. The only thing Avery's done to cross him has been to stick up for herself and the female victims of a serial kidnapper. Only a dickhead would retaliate against a girl for doing that. Someone comes to stand next to me, which prompts me to look up. It's Avery's mom, Sherry, and I can tell by her grim expression she's got something on her mind. I slide my phone away.
I know you hate me, but please don't hurt my daughter. It's such a vile, cowardly way to get back at me. I'll do whatever you want to make amends. Just please don't hurt Avery.
Jesus Christ. Here we go with the melodrama. I don't know what you're talking about, Sherry. Why can't you leave her alone? I did leave her alone. I didn't even want her at Granthorpe. Didn't Ethan tell you?
Ethan knows people at the school. He felt it was a good place for her to be. Not too far from home and in a community that he still feels a part of. Then Casanova.
She blows out a breath.
The irony is not lost on us. I promise.
When I don't respond, she leans forward, giving me a whiff of her $300 an ounce trophy wife perfume.
So if you'd just give us a break, she says softly, we'd really appreciate it.
Avery came looking for me. You want her to stay away from me? Tell her.
I'm talking to you for the same reason I always did. Guys are the ones who go too far.
Too far. Sherry is fucking unbelievable. My temper's a grenade where this woman is concerned, and she's tugging at the pin. You can't rape the willin'.
Her mouth drops open, and once again she looks shocked. Are you saying that you've already...
I'm not saying a damn thing. Other than that, I don't get off on forcing myself on women, which you should already fucking know.
She jerks back. I was wrong about that night when she was drunk. I apologized to you.
That apology was bullshit, and you know it. Deep down, you still think the reason nothing happened is because I didn't know she was out there.
Can you blame me, Shane?
Yes.
With the family you come from, and the way you look at her, from the minute you guys met. I know that look.
Sherry's a complete lunatic. Of course, I was attracted to Avery. She was super cute. But I don't buy for a second that Sherry read anything sinister on my face when I looked at 15-year-old Avery. I protected her from everything back then, including my own urges. There's something deeply disturbed about the paranoia Sherry targets me with. I've had my suspicions for a while that I remind her of someone from her own past. How old were you when it happened, I ask, taking a shot? 15? 16? She recoils like I've slapped her. A moment later, she goes from looking stricken to shuddering her expression. Stay away from her. No. Sherry's fury is palpable as she glares at me. If you don't think she's safe around me, tell her to stay away from me. I promise that's a better use of your time because you've still got influence over her. You've got none with me. There's a beat while I let that sink in. Zero. Avery chooses that moment to show up to check on things. She swoops in and clutches her mom's arm. Mom, everything okay? Sherry glances my way, and Avery turns to look at me. Shane? Avery says. When I answer, my voice isn't particularly friendly. Yeah? Avery steps closer to me. I'm pissed about Sherry's ongoing harassment, but my ability to be a hard-ass is seriously impaired with Avery's big blue eyes imploring me to be nice. Are you all right? Avery whispers. That takes me off guard. When has anyone in the core family unit ever asked me if I'm okay when something's going down? Honestly, I am all right. There were many days I was torn to shreds by having Sherry's paranoia targeted at me, but those days are long gone. Yeah, I'm fine. Your mom has concerns, as usual. I told her she should talk to you, not me.
Okay, good.
Avery's smile is sweet.
Thank you.
Her gratitude is misplaced, which I'm sure she'll hear soon enough from her banshee mother. For now, though, I'll roll with it. I have bigger issues to deal with than Sherry Kershaw's hysteria. Do you mind if we stop in Back Bay after brunch?
No, I don't mind, Avery says. Want to say goodbye to Ethan while I say goodbye here?
After a moment, I nod, and I'm rewarded with another smile that tries to pulverize my defenses. This girl is all kinds of dangerous in her own right.
Chapter 20. Avery.
Please don't go, Ave, Mom says. Come home with us instead. Ethan would be happy to drive you to school tomorrow. We can have a movie night and make Nutella protein balls for you to take back as a snack. My mom, who wears sample-size designer outfits, doesn't indulge her sweet tooth often. Which means if she's talking Nutella balls, she's clearly in some kind of panic. Brunch went pretty well, right? I try to make my voice cheerful. I already evaded Ethan's questions with light, casual replies. I want to do the same with my mom. Why don't we try to do this again next week? I'll work on Shane to see if I can get him to agree to spend the weekend at home. At whose home? Yours and Ethan's. That's Shane's home too, Mom. She purses her lips. I sigh. You do realize that not seeing Shane is hurting Ethan, right? Mom's sigh is much heavier than mine. Ethan can see Shane anytime he wants. He's had dinner with Shane at Granthorpe several times. I support that decision. I've encouraged it. Ethan can't see Shane anytime he wants because Shane isn't open to it. But he could be. It's not your job to fix Ethan and Shane's relationship. They need to go to therapy. A surprised laugh escapes my throat before I can stop it. Neither of them would ever agree to therapy. Ethan's a workaholic who barely keeps up with my mom's crazy social calendar. Fitting another thing into his week is not going to happen. And Shane? I shudder at the thought of even mentioning it to someone like him. He thinks the best way to deal with a problem is to bury it under 1,000 pounds of ice. Right, sure. I'll tell you what, Mom. If you can get your husband to agree to therapy, we'll circle back to this discussion. At this point, Shane reappears, so I give my mom a quick hug. I'll talk to you soon. I love you, she says, hugging me tightly. I pull away gently and head to the door that Shane's holding open for me. He's silent as we walk to the valet stand. Ethan asked what's going on between us. I keep my voice light and cheerful for him, too. I told him we are trying to be friends. The corner of Shane's mouth quirks. When the car arrives, he opens the Porsche's passenger door, and I slide into the buttery leather seat. What? I ask.
Nothing. That resembles the truth, somewhat.
He closes my door and goes around to get in the driver's side. As we travel to Back Bay, I'm not sure how to broach the subject we need to talk about. I can tell my mom said something that dredged up the past for him. I want him to know that's not okay with me. Watching his hand rest on the gear shift, I'm tempted to put mine over the top of it. But tender touches need to fall into the same category as kisses. Despite how tough it is, I refrain from reaching out. Can we talk about it? I ask.
About what?
Ethan wants to know what's going on with us. I'm sure my mom does, too. Shane's head turns slightly, not all the way to look at me, but enough to acknowledge he's heard me. Then his eyes return to the road in front of him, his expression neutral and unconcerned. I don't know how you do that, I say.
What's that?
Pretend you don't care. The corners of his mouth curve up.
Who says I'm pretending?
I shake my head. In your place, I would have to know exactly what was said between me and Ethan. Just like I hope you're going to tell me what my mom said to you. He shakes his head.
I'm not going to rehash it. If you want to know what's on your mom's mind, ask her yourself. Leave me out of it.
I think she would very much like to leave you out, I say lightly. His expression turns grim.
She has a problem with me that has nothing to do with me. She needs to get her head examined.
She's wrong to be as paranoid as she is. I think it's just that Ethan said that you had trouble controlling your temper after your mom left. You acted out and got in a lot of fights or something? And even when you learned to keep your rage in check, he worried it was always just below the surface. He thinks you never got over your mom leaving. His fingers tighten on the steering wheel, turning his knuckles white.
He told Sherry that, huh?
They were planning to get married.
Yes, they talked about us. And she said you were perfect, of course.
No, I'm sure she didn't. She probably said I was stubborn and had a hard time making friends. Too tentative around new people.
Why would she say that? It's not true.
Yes, it is. Hesitant to try to connect. Because of my unreliable dad, the counselor said.
Kids don't get over being betrayed by a parent. Adults don't always realize that. Little kids are so trusting and willing to forgive. Parents forget that kids grow up, and the window closes. My mom has invited me to visit her in Portugal at least a dozen times.
He shakes his head, his expression even more grim.
Like I'd ever go now.
I wince. This is how he copes with pain and loss. He ends the possibility of being hurt by someone a second time by cutting them off completely. No wonder his ability to freeze us out of his life the past 2 years was so profound. He learned and perfected the technique years earlier. How was Ethan when your mom left? Was he too preoccupied with his own loss to be there for you?
No. My dad was great. He cut back on his hours, picked me up from school every day, took me with him to his office if he had to work late. I'd sit and do my homework or watch videos while he worked. For months and months, he made sure I was never alone. If I wasn't with my friends or my grandparents, I was with him.
So you knew he cared about you?
Of course.
But we messed that up for you, huh? I say gently.
You never seemed to resent us when we first moved in, because I didn't. Look, I was 9 when she left. By the time I was 15, I was long past wanting them to get back together. I told him he should start dating. It was time, and I was fine with it. When he met your mom, he'd been dating a couple of years. It was different with her. I could tell right away it was serious. He was happy, and I was glad he'd found someone. It wasn't until later that I realized she was going to become a problem for me. His fingers tap on the steering wheel. When he first talked about marrying her, he asked me if I was okay with it. I said yes. I never tried to interfere. I thought it would be good for him. I had my own stuff going on, so we weren't spending as much time together. Why shouldn't he spend his free time with a wife who'd be in his bed full time? That's how life is supposed to be for a man in his 40s. He loves you, and you obviously love him too. I don't understand why you barely see him anymore. I know you were mad at him for misjudging you, Shane, but I think you know my mom was so upset and irrational that morning that Ethan didn't know what to think. And he very quickly showed you were innocent of the things she was saying. He apologized so sincerely, right? Ethan's a good man. When I was young, no one could have been a better dad. But after Sherry's accusation, when he took her side against me, I knew I'd never be able to relax in that house again. Those cameras he installed. Her paranoia infected him. That morning when she went off the deep end, he looked so gutted. That gutted me. He clenches his jaw. He loves me, but he doesn't trust me. Now that cuts both ways. I love him, but I do not trust him. He'd never make that mistake again, Shane. Neither would I. He's quiet and clearly unconvinced. I think about the locked room and the secrets he would never trust me with. Look, no one's asking you to share all your secrets with us. But if we all spend more time together, things will be less awkward. Can you stay in Aspen the whole week after Christmas? It's Declan's family's house. You'd feel comfortable in that group, right? There's still a problem between your mom and me. It's not just about that morning. It's about how she treated me the entire time we were all living together. And the way she still treats me to this day. Whatever it is about me that triggers her, it's always going to trigger her. And that is not my problem. I almost told her to fuck off this morning. I would not last days sharing a house with her. And if she tried to fix you and Declan up in front of me, I would end up showing her exactly what happens when I really lose my temper. All right. I guess things are still too complicated. We can work on it slowly over time. Why don't you skip Colorado altogether? You can come by the house when we're back after New Year's. You could see your Grandpa Sullivan and maybe go to Connecticut to see Ethan's parents. Low-key, low stress. You're not going to Colorado for 2 weeks without me, Avery. Why not? I don't want you and Declan together when I'm not around. My brows rise in surprise. Now you don't trust Declan either? I trust Declan 100% to have my back in a fight. Or to take me at my word. But do I trust another man, any man, with you in a big house in the mountains? No. That causes a shiver to run down my spine. He's got no right to act so possessive. I'm not interested in Declan. But if I was, it wouldn't be up to you whether I pursued something with him. When the semester ends, I'm moving out and our arrangement ends. Eventually, there will be another guy in my life. He's silent as he pulls up to his grandfather's house. Shane? No. His jaw is set. The car idles next to the security keypad with the gates looming above us, casting shadows on the hood. No what? Even if you move out in a few days, this thing between us is nowhere close to being done, so no. I won't let anyone else have you. Heat washes over me at the rough and intimate way he looks at me. But no matter how sexy he is, I can't let him think he gets to control everything.
You won't let them?
How could you stop it?
The way I always do. I'll drive them away.
How? By ruining my reputation the way Declan did in high school?
Of course not.
He lowers his window so he can reach the keypad. I don't understand.
I make people assume you belong to me. Most guys won't risk a confrontation with me.
The memory of how tightly he held me while making the toast at the frat house comes rushing back. He wanted everyone to see us together and believe I was his girlfriend. I'll say we broke up.
I'll just try, he says calmly.
An uncomfortable flush washes over me. I stare at him silently, trying to decide what else to say.
For you to convince them, I'd have to let you go. Which I won't.
His voice isn't gentle, it's terse. As if he hates that he doesn't want us to end.
So as I've told you before, no one touches you except me.
Our relationship is a spider web. Deceptively fragile in appearance, but actually an inescapable trap. Maybe I've been naive to think I have control over what happens. Shane said he's a dominant personality. Clearly, he wasn't exaggerating. He punches in a security code.
We're here, so let's drop this for now. If you need to, we can talk about it later.
If I need to? I'm speechless. He's called himself a beast who's holding me captive. And suddenly, I realize just how honest a statement that was on his part.
So, yes, of course. We're going to need to talk more about this.
The gate slides open and we roll forward, curving around the tall hedges. The long driveway's clogged with cars, most of them expensive.
Hell, he murmurs. When I texted him, Pops didn't tell me he had people over.
Shane parks the Porsche at the end of the row.
Wait in the car, I won't be long.
I tilt my head but say nothing. I'm not exactly anxious to fraternize with strangers at the moment anyway. Shane gets out, and I watch him walk toward the door. He's only halfway there when he takes out his phone and stops to look at it. After he does, he turns around and comes back to the car. He opens the passenger door.
What?
I ask. With a small smile, Shane points at a security camera perched atop a metal post.
He saw you and texted me a message that said, "Do not leave that girl in the car. I want to see her."
This makes me smile too. I take Shane's offered hand to climb out. He leads me to the front door where his grandfather waits on the landing for us. Mr. Sullivan shakes Shane's hand and cocks his head toward the hall, indicating Shane should walk on. Mr. Sullivan gives me a side hug and draws me in the other direction toward the kitchen. As we go, I catch a glimpse of the formal dining room where a whole group of men sit around a table. Gangsters? Some of them wear dress shirts and trousers. Others are in jeans and sweatshirts. None looks especially sinister, but I suppose criminals don't always look shady in the light of day. Shane steps into the dining room, and most of them stand to greet him, reaching across the table to shake his hand. He says a few words, and I hear their laughter. Then he steps back and closes the door.
Do you want lunch, darling?
Oh, no, we just ate. Mr. Sullivan pours himself a cup of coffee and offers me one. I nod and take the cup when he's filled it. Shane joins us in the kitchen a few moments later.
Avery, sit down for a minute. I need to talk to my grandfather alone.
I nod as Mr. Sullivan gives Shane an appraising look that doesn't seem especially pleased. They move to a nook that's off the breakfast area. Shane says a few words and then brings out his phone and shows his grandfather something. I wonder if he's telling him about the fire and showing him pictures of the house. Mr. Sullivan's attention to the screen lasts longer than I expect, though. When I finish my coffee, I rinse the cup and move a bit closer to them. Shane notices and puts his hand out to his grandfather, who gives him the phone back. Shane slides his cell away as they start toward me.
To Shane, Mr. Sullivan says,
"Yeah, someone will look into it."
When his grandfather reaches the counter where I'm waiting, his serious expression lightens, and he gestures for us to sit down at the island. Even though Mr. Sullivan has a whole room full of men waiting for him, he doesn't appear rushed. Instead, he asks me how the weekend is going. I tell him about the party we went to, and show him a couple of pictures that someone posted of Shane and me. His grandfather smiles.
"Where are the close-ups of the two of you? Did you get one at the house before you left? Send me one of those."
"There are no shots from the house," Shane says. "It wasn't a high school prom, Pops."
His grandfather leans back, giving Shane an assessing look. It's exactly the same look Shane gives other people. A pretty girl dresses up for you and you don't get a picture?
"What's wrong with you? Your cousin Jack takes pictures of his cheeseburgers."
I chuckle.
"Idiot," Shane says with a smirk. "Who? You or him?"
Mr. Sullivan's expression is bemused. Shane rolls his eyes.
"Tell me about the party, Avery Loaf."
I scroll through images and find another slightly blurry shot of us to show. We had a good time until I started causing trouble, and Shane had to get me out of there. Mr. Sullivan laughs.
"You caused trouble. I doubt that."
"No, I did." I glance over at Shane to see if it's all right to tell his grandfather what happened. When Shane doesn't move, I lean toward him and whisper,
"All right to share the story?"
Shane's arm comes to rest on the back of my chair.
"Little late to ask now," he says, but he looks more amused than annoyed. "Come on," his grandfather says, beckoning me with his fingers. "You can't start a story and leave it unfinished. On you go."
His Irish accent is charming, and I can't resist being charmed. With a last glance at Shane's profile, I press my lips together and then turn to Mr. Sullivan. I explain about seeing the guys with the Casanova roses. Mr. Sullivan says darkly,
"I've heard about Casanova. Someone needs to deal with him."
That's the exact wording Shane uses. He has so many mannerisms and turns of phrase that seem to come from his grandfather. Mr. Sullivan sips his coffee, and his expression remains grim.
"You're sure the lads at the party wore those flowers as a tribute to Casanova?"
I nod. It's the first thing I asked when I confronted the guy from my class. I wanted to know if he realized that color rose is Casanova's calling card. He smirked at me, making it very clear he knew exactly what he was doing. Wearing it was like a slap. My teeth grind together as bitter anger hits me again. To sneer and celebrate someone who stalks women and completely erases them from the world? Those guys were trying to intimidate us again. I look away, scowling. I wasn't in the mood to be intimidated, especially by a bunch of shitty fanboys. I exhale, trying to get control of myself. Sorry for swearing. I guess I'm still upset. After a hard swallow, I shake my head. I tore off every rose I could get my hands on and smashed them. Stealing a sip of Shane's coffee, I study Mr. Sullivan over the mug's rim, trying to determine whether his impression of me has changed. His gray brows crowd each other, forming an angry crease.
"So it was you who had to confront them.
Then what?" My voice is distant. "That's it. What more could I do?" Mr. Sullivan looks at Shane.
"And what did you do, my lad, while this went on?"
My gaze shifts to Shane's handsome face, which gives nothing away. "Shane did the perfect thing," I say. "He stopped them from trying to squash my rebellion."
"Oh, yes. How so?"
Mr. Sullivan asks. "They wanted to get their hands on me, to force me out of the spotlight. And then I'm not sure what they would have done. They never got the chance."
"There was a bit of a scuffle," Shane admits, his tone mild. "You alone?"
"No, Declan saw and jumped in, and Sorensen came up and cast a big shadow."
His grandfather finally smiles.
"He does that wherever he goes, so he does. Good. And what kinds of casualties?"
None, really. Shane shrugs his broad shoulders. Some scuffed knuckles, maybe a broken nose. The nose. Their side or yours? Them. Good. Mr. Sullivan's spoon drops to the saucer with a small clatter as he looks at me.
Did you warn Shane what you plan to do?
I shake my head.
You should have. Sullivans think fast on their feet, but it's always good to have a minute to plan.
If I'd told him ahead of time, he might have tried to stop me. I couldn't risk it. Mr. Sullivan flashes a smile at me.
Aye, sometimes there's no help for it, is there? Anger must have its way, and so it will.
Exactly, I say softly.
We should go, Shane says, rising. We'll see you soon, though, Pops. I'm bringing it at Christmas Eve.
Oh, my God. The beast strikes again, springing his traps.
Right, good,
Mr. Sullivan says as he stands. Licking my lips, I draw a deep breath as I stand, too. Well, maybe I'll be able to come. It depends on the holiday flights to Colorado and some other things.
Oh, aye. But you'll make it work out so you'll be with us on Christmas Eve,
Mr. Sullivan says confidently with a wink.
Since Shane's helping you stage your party rebellions, you won't want to disappoint him, I'd imagine.
I wouldn't, but
good girl, he says approvingly,
cutting off the rest of what I plan to say about my mom and Ethan and plane tickets. Mr. Sullivan taps his cheek and adds,
now let's have a kiss right here, and it'll set me up for life.
Unable to resist, I lean in and kiss his cheek.
That's the stuff, all right,
he says with an infectious grin. He claps Shane's shoulder as he goes by.
We'll talk later, lad, when I have some news.
Shane walks me down the hall with his grandfather. Mr. Sullivan stands at the door to the dining room but doesn't open it. Instead, he waits, and then waves to us as we go out the front door and close it behind us.
Cunning, I say softly.
You told him you're bringing me to Christmas Eve. So now there's added pressure on me to stay in town. Shane nods.
You do not have to wear a ball gown.
You think you're cute. My gaze cuts to him and I wrinkle my nose. I like your grandfather a lot. But not more than I love my mom and Ethan.
If they want to see you over the break, they can either skip Colorado or see you when I bring you.
The timing of my Colorado trip is up to me, Shane, not you. He opens the passenger door.
I pause, looking him straight in the eyes. Tell me you understand that. Do whatever you want, Avery.
His gaze is measured.
If you think it's a good idea to go straight to Colorado and spend the whole break there, do it.
Really? He nods, closing the door. When he joins me inside and starts the car, he says,
I have a lot of experience ignoring people's reactions to my unpopular decisions. That means no matter where we are for the holidays, I'll be able to deal with the fallout. Let's see if you can say the same.
Are you saying if I go straight to Colorado, you'll come too?
Of course.
I exhale softly, watching him out of the corner of my eye. If that happens, will you ruin Christmas?
There's a brief flash of a smile on his face. Who am I? The Grinch?
I don't know. Your actions are highly suspect. You said you couldn't do the whole break with my mom. Now you say you will.
Another thought occurs to me, a dark underpinning to his strategy.
If you miss Christmas Eve here to come to Colorado, your grandfather will blame me.
I'd imagine he will, since it'll be your fault.
You are unbelievable. Absolutely ruthless, I say, shaking my head. His lips curve into a smile as he shrugs.
If you don't want monster trouble, stop baiting monsters.
Chapter 21. Shane. Downstairs, where the light best mimics the lecture hall, Avery films herself practicing her presentation. I leave her to concentrate, going upstairs to watch a football game. There's a heavy three-panel wood screen that hides the bedroom's 60-inch flat-screen television, and I move it,
Usually, if I watch something in my room, I just stream on my phone, but I don't want to watch an entire game that way. Sitting with my back against the headboard, I put on the sports network. Periodically, my mind wanders to what I'd rather be doing in bed right now. I grab a pillow and lift it to my face. Regrettably, I don't catch the scent of Avery's coconut shampoo. I picture her lying over the stacked pillows while I fucked her from above. My cock hardens at the thought. I want to do that again. And so much more. In her current mood, she'll probably try to resist having sex unless all I'm after is a blowjob. My gaze cuts to the doorway. I could take care of my erection myself, but that wouldn't be as satisfying as having her do it for me. When I go downstairs, she's not filming herself. As I approach, I realize she's watching an online video about guns. Did you finish your presentation? Yeah. I sent a couple of versions to my mom and Ethan. I also sent the one I think is strongest to Daniel and Todd so they can review the content and make suggestions. I lean over her laptop. Guns again? Yes, just investigating for later in case I need it. The closest shooting range is just off campus. I could take a bus or get an Uber from the dorm. I want her to stop thinking about guns, but Avery's stubborn. When she wants something, she doesn't let it go easily. She closes the lid of the laptop and looks up at me, all sea blue eyes and determination. Hard to resist. Granthorpe sent an email asking all the male students to give DNA samples. She says, I saw it. Do you think that means the police have a sample of Casanova's DNA? Maybe. Should we give the gas can to the police and let them see if there's touch DNA or fingerprints? He wore gloves. Okay, so last night he did, but maybe not when he filled the can or touched it at some other time. She spends too much time talking to my dad about forensic evidence. I'm going to hold off on turning the can over to the cops. I want to see what comes in from the neighbors. Are you going to give the police your DNA? No. Her eyes shift back to her laptop, and she unplugs it. She probably has something more to say about my lack of cooperation with the police, but if there's a tide of follow-up questions, she manages to hold it back. Dinner? I ask as she stands. The sun's going down. Brunch was a long time ago. She shakes her head. Not hungry yet? Then we could do something else. I take the laptop from her and set it aside. My hand slides into her silky hair and tugs it to tip her head back. I kiss her slowly, the taste like honey in my mouth. Her lips part, letting me have her tongue for a few moments. When she draws back, she gives me an appraising look. I've broken the no-kissing rule again, and by the downward tip of her mouth, she's trying to look unhappy about it. I'd prefer a smile, but I'm not ruffled by the frown. She's still here and still mine, whether she wants to admit it or not. I rub my thumb over her lower lip. On Monday, you should go to student health and get a prescription for birth control pills. Why would I do that? She asks, her expression shifting to defiance. I'm not going to need them anytime soon. I fold my arms across my chest. We're spending Christmas and New Year's Eve together. You don't think it'll happen? Her voice is breathy and gentle when she says, no. I'm not convinced, and I doubt she is either. You sure that's a line you want to draw in the sand, baby? Because some nights the sex will be rough, and that's easier for a girl to take the traditional way. A flush spreads over her pretty cheeks, but she arches a brow. The thing I let you do to me? That wasn't meant to be a regular thing we do. I just wanted to try it, then you should get some pills. Despite the blush, she looks me straight in the eye, and she's so fucking cute. I want to kiss her again, but I know that would just set her off more. What's wrong with oral? She asks, gathering up her laptop. Not a thing. So, for now, that's what you can have. I chuckled dismissively. You think so?
Her eyes snap up to my face like she's ready to confront me the way she did the frat boys with the flowers. My unmoved expression must make her think better of it, because she just studies me, albeit with fire in her eyes. It's unclear to me why she thinks an announcement from her will affect what I do when it comes to sex. Maybe because I said she could set limits, and she doesn't understand what hard limits are. The truth is, I've already decided there are things I won't do while she's still so young and inexperienced, but I'm not looking to her for guidance on that score, since she's got no real experience to draw from. I need to ask you something, I say, sobering. She circles around me in a wide arc, out of my reach. Yes? Besides the pageant PTSD, is there any other trauma in your past? Anything that triggers anxiety or depression? Her head tilts, and she licks her lips. No. She waits a moment, but when I don't follow up with another question, she turns and heads upstairs. We're not done for the night, but I'm not going to chase her until I've eaten. Heading into the kitchen, my mind still on how sweet her mouth tastes, even when it's frowning. I chop some herbs to add to ground beef for burgers, listening for sounds of her. None come. The fact that she doesn't return while I'm grilling tells me she's either distracted or she's avoiding me. I toast a bun on the grill and melt cheese on the burger before sitting down to eat. That earthy flavor suits me. When I'm finished, I head upstairs and go straight to her room, passing the empty guest bathroom on the way. Her room's empty, too. Well, well. I'm surprised she's in my room, which she must know is dangerous ground if she's trying to keep her distance. As I pass the locked room, I check to be sure the door's still secure, which it is. I enter my bedroom, and Avery's standing next to a nightstand with its top drawer open. My eyes narrow, drop into her hands. Jesus Christ. She's fiddling with my spring-action knife. The worst-case scenario of what happens if it pops open explodes in my brain like a bomb. Drop that, I bark. Her head jerks toward my voice, and her fingers release the weapon, which falls to the floor. I stalk over and bend down to grab the knife. She managed to disengage the safety. When I stand, I glower at her. You're like a kid I've got to watch every minute. Her expression is mutinous. The blade is sharp enough to cut your fingers right off, and it's spring-activated to pop open. I hit the button, and the carbon blade releases from its sheath. With no force at all, I bury the blade in a pillow and, with a small movement, slice it open until its feathery guts pour out. Her eyes widen. I smack the pillow, which sends dozens of feathers into the air. They land like snowflakes on the dark carpet. I close the blade and re-engage the safety before dropping it into the nightstand drawer. Exhaling some frustration, I shake my head. My heart still pounding in my chest as though I've run a mile. There's not much in life that raises my blood pressure, but the thought of Avery getting hurt gets a rise every time. For fuck's sake. Later, we're gonna have a physical conversation about knife fights and hand-to-hand combat. I blow out a breath through my pursed lips, then I grab her hands and raise them. These are beautiful fucking hands. I don't want you to lose a finger. If you want to examine a weapon, ask first. I was just looking, she says defensively. I arch a brow and give her a stern expression. The safety was on before you touched it. So you did more than look. You could have hurt yourself. She needs to be punished, but she also needs me to teach her weapon safety. Everything's a delicate balance with Avery, especially now. I glance down at the knife and shake my head before I close the drawer. I promise I'll teach you. Don't get ahead of yourself, baby. Pulling her against me in a tight hug, I kiss the top of her head. Her body relaxes a little. You ruined your pillow? She murmurs against my chest. Look at the mess you made. Made my point, though, didn't I? That blade's razor sharp. Fisting her hair, I tug her head back so I can kiss her. She tries to resist, but it only makes me kiss her harder. When I raise my head, we're both breathless.
You're going to clean up the mess, me? She says skeptically. My hand slides down to squeeze her ass. Yeah, for being a bad little girl. She clucks her tongue in protest, but I twist her arms behind her back and hold them there, trapping her. The other punishment, you get to choose. Her wide eyes look up into mine. Other punishment? Trying to pull free, she leans back. My grip on her arms is too tight for her to escape. Three choices. Spanked, and then on your knees to give me a blowjob. Naked, except for your tail, until it's time for bed. Or bent over the footboard while I fuck you the way I did last night. Her head shakes so strongly, her hair falls over her face. 10 seconds to choose or I'll choose for you. 9, 8, 7. Tail, she blurts. I smirk and release her arms. Can I trust you to go in the bathroom to put your own tail in? Or should I empty the sink drawers of sharp objects first? Jerk, she says. Maybe I'll cut the tail right off its holder and destroy it. Go ahead. We both know I've got something bigger and better to put inside you where that's supposed to go. Her stride falters for a second, but she doesn't turn around to argue. Smart. Because at the moment, my body wants the release it gets from rough sex that leaves a girl really sore.
Chapter 22. Avery. I'm naked except for the tail. I've painted on cat's eyes, and as I study my profile in the mirror of the guest bathroom, I have to admit, it's really hot. Resting a palm against my fluttering belly, I draw in a breath and exhale. As I pad down the hall to Shane's bedroom, I'm filled with warring emotions. I'm turned on by this game. I'm also unnerved by the slipperiness of the slope. When I pose in the bedroom doorway, he's texting. His eyes catch a glimpse and his head lifts. He smiles and raises the camera. I immediately dart out of the doorway and into the hall. No pictures, geez. Just for me, I swear. His voice sounds amused by my pedestrian concerns. Absolutely not. Phones get hacked. After a beat, he says, "All right, phone's in a drawer, come back." Peering around the corner through the doorway, I find he's standing in the middle of the room, smiling. I step into view. Lifting the end of the soft furry tail, my manner is cat-like in its challenge. With an arched brow, I say, "Well, no talking." Shane hauls his shirt over his head, massive muscles rippling, and tosses it aside. "Get down on four paws and come over here." Of course he wants me to crawl, so twisted. Of course, I did promise to do this as a reward for the way he stood between me and the 5 asshole frat guys, but crawling? Glancing down at the carpet, I wrinkle my nose. "Come on, kitten." His voice is husky and cajoling, like he's coaxing an actual pet. "Come over here so I can make you purr." My nipples tighten, and goose flesh rises on my arms. Sexy talk from him is hard to resist. Especially when he uses that tone of voice. Finally, I lower myself to the carpet and crawl across it slowly, with an exaggerated swing of my hips that makes my tail sway. His breathing is audible as I reach him, which causes more shivers of excitement within my body. I love when his control slips because of me. Embracing the kitten roll, I rub my cheek against his pant leg and lick his zipper. "Fuck," he murmurs softly, adjusting himself. His fingers tangle in my hair, gripping it tighter as I tease. Muscles contract, making his abs as hard and flat as a washboard. My teeth close on the zipper tab and tug it downward. His groan is deep when my tongue tunnels into his trousers. After a moment, he steps back and strips off his pants and underwear. His cock is long and thick and hard. It's the only one I've seen, but I think it matches the rest of him because it's gorgeous. I lick the drop of pre-cum from the slit with the tip of my tongue.
He growls softly, his biceps flexing as he catches my chin in his palm. He draws me up to my feet, then picks me up and sets me on his bed. He lies down on his back, running his hand down his belly before he grips his cock and strokes it. His head tips back, mouth open as he sucks in a deep breath. I watch greedily as his chest expands. Yeah. Gorgeous. Capturing my hips in his hands, he pulls me over and above him, so my knees land next to his temples. An arm around my waist drags my pussy down to his mouth. His lips and tongue devour me, and my body collapses onto his, my belly against the hard muscles of his pecs, his six-pack under my breasts. His hand tugs the tail, moving the smooth metal plug inside me. That sends waves of arousal coursing through my pelvis, prompting me to rub my clit against his chin. My breath catches as my core clenches with need. "Lick me," he orders. Oh, right. I'm supposed to be pleasuring him, too. Raw tingling engulfs my flesh. His mouth is so amazingly talented. "It's hard to concentrate," I murmur. A slap lands on my naked ass, making my body jerk. "No excuses, kitten. And no talking." I nip the soft skin of his scrotum, and he sucks in a breath. Then he slaps my ass twice more and harder. "Does my naughty kitten need to be spanked first? If so, I'm up for it." My body shudders at the threat. I'm so wet and ready to come. What this kitten needs is anything he wants to do. Lowering my face, I lick his sack. He groans and raises his hips, beckoning me to give him more. I suck and lick slowly until I've tasted every inch of what's between his legs. His tongue pushes deep into my aching core and I groan. It's so soft and warm, so deliciously thick as it stretches me. My body throbs with pleasure and need. I want more than his tongue inside me. My hips circle, grinding my flesh against him. Then, to show him without words how I'm feeling, I take the head of his cock into my mouth and suck hard and sweet. He moans against me. His fingers and mouth become rougher, which makes me squirm, until the undeniable sparks of arousal catch and burst into flames. I moan as the orgasm hits me, my legs shaking uncontrollably, my walls contracting around his tongue. He keeps going, relentlessly, until I feel like I'll shake apart. When the orgasm ebbs, I pull my body away from his mouth. It's too intense when he sucks my clit after I've come. His head falls back, and his breath is short. His fingers squeeze my upturned ass. My turn. The tingling aftershocks continue inside me as I suck him into my mouth. Everything's wickedly intense, and I enjoy the feel of him. I like the way my body rises as he sucks in air. It feels like he needs something only I can give him. His hips rise and fall, his cock jerking deeper and sliding back over my tongue. His hands slide down to grip the backs of my thighs. My head meets his groin over and over, letting him thrust as deep as he can reach. "Fuck yes," he groans. "Just like that, baby. I close my fingers around the base and stroke up and down while sucking the rest of his length. His hand plays with the tail, and his teeth bite the inside of my thigh. The bite isn't hard enough to leave a mark, it's just a tease. We're playing with each other, and it's so, so sexy. When he comes, he fills my mouth. A little fluid escapes, spilling down onto him and the sheets below. This bed must have so many traces of us and our secret relationship. His grip goes slack as he pants to catch his breath. I use the moment to slide off him. I land on my side, my mouth near his hip. My breathing's short and staccato as well. After a while, I say softly, "It's pretty great, right? The way we are together?"
"It's exceptional."
His voice is husky and confident. Exceptional.
That makes me smile.
I know we're good together. But I like hearing him admit it. He's the one with experience. We lie along each other's bodies for a long time. Lips near hips. My toes tucked into the grooves of his headboard.
"You should tell my dad and your mom the truth."
"About what?"
I scoff with a small laugh. "This."
My head turns sharply, surprise jarring me out of my stupor. "What? No way." I sit up slowly, crossing my arms over my chest and bringing my knees together.
"I don't mean the details, Eve. I meant you should tell them we're in a relationship."
"It's way too soon to tell anyone anything." He sits up and grabs me, pulling me toward the head of the bed.
"Sure, too soon."
The teasing in his voice softens the sarcasm. He twists so I'm half pinned beneath him.
"Over the past couple days, you've swallowed a river of my cum."
His hand slides down to my belly and presses. Then his head drops so he can suck on my nipple. I squirm, trying to escape, though I don't really want to. He raises his head slightly and licks the wet nipple.
"When is it time to make it official, baby? When someone catches us with my cock in your mouth in Colorado?"
I'm pretty sure he's being purposely crude to make it harder for me to argue with him. Shane brings his mouth close to mine, but I turn my head to avoid his kiss. "Cut it out," I protest. "No," he says, pinning my arms over my head. His green eyes hold mine. Then he lowers his face and kisses my neck before he whispers in my ear,
"You belong to me. I'll do what I want to you."
He licks my throat slowly, and God help me, it feels so sexy and delicious. "I won't tell them. You can't make me." Sounding childish even to my own ears makes me roll my eyes.
"Doesn't matter."
His unconcerned tone matches his words.
"Deep down, they know."
My body stiffens. "No, they don't." The flat of his tongue grazes my nipple.
"Anyone who sees us together can tell."
"Not true," I whisper, trying again to twist free of his grip, this time in earnest. He pins my arms again easily and exhales a small laugh.
"Are you really still so innocent?"
His lips brush mine in a kiss that's more of a caress.
"All right. Stay a kitten as long as you want."
"I'm not playing games." I force some backbone into my voice. They noticed our new rapport because it's so unexpected and shocking, given how big the rift was. "But they don't think we're together like this." A smirk persists as he shakes his head.
"I'm telling you, they've got their suspicions. To keep it a secret, you'll have to lie, and lie well." "That's what you want to do?"
"If I need to, yes." An edge of dark unrest settles into his expression and his voice.
"The innocent virgin princess for as long as possible?"
"I guess. What's wrong with that?" "You certainly liked finding out I'm still a virgin, which is mostly your fault." His head is bent over me, but it rises at my last accusation. Shane's sharp scrutiny makes me uncomfortable.
"I love that you're a virgin, Avery, but I'm not planning to keep you one. I'll enjoy your body even more when you're not, and so will you."
Be that as it may, we're not telling Ethan and my mom that we're sleeping together.
"Lying will make it seem sketchy."
"It is sketchy. So far it is." I snap my fingers and try to move my trapped wrists. Trading blowjobs for a place to live? A cat's tail? Come on. Things are kinky and sketchy, Shane.
He shrugs. "Yeah, you probably shouldn't mention the tail."
His smirk returns and is very infectious. I have to work to keep from sharing in the joke.
After Shane releases my wrists, he rolls onto his back and sits up.
The vacuum is in the hall closet. You clean up the feathers and then dress in school clothes and come down to the basement.
School clothes?